It's time for America's most unique motorsports show, Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor, brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill. And thanks for tuning in to the show again today. Each and every day, we appreciate all the people that tune in with us. And Chuck is already checking in from Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. And we've got a lot to talk about today. You know, we really didn't get into it that much yesterday, but we're going to talk about it in pretty much in great length today. Austin, I don't know where to start on this. First of all, let me tell you that we're going to have Michael McDowell, Cup driver, going to join us here in just a little bit. He's going to be on the show with us. We'll talk to him about, you know, everything that's going on. Man, what a great year Michael McDowell is having this year. He finished third at Sonoma, 13th last weekend. He's had a bunch of great finishes this year with Front Row Motorsports. So we'll talk to him about that and everything that's going on. We'll talk a little bit about what the cars are doing and how that affects the smaller teams. So that should be on here in just a little bit. We'll have Michael McDowell on. Austin, how you doing today, buddy? You doing all right?
Doing great.
Doing great. If you could just get your hand over there on the slide, right? A topic that we didn't talk much about yesterday, and maybe we should talk about it a little bit today, is up at Husetts, David Gravel hits the pit gate. We didn't get into much of this yesterday, but what did you feel about that incident, and should they have allowed David Gravel to fix his tire? Yes or no?
Should he be allowed to fix it? Yes, because you have the option to go to the work area at any time during a red or a yellow.
Was it past the halfway point?
Doesn't matter. Work area is open the entire race. It just amount the work area is open the entire race. It's just up until halfway you get 2 laps or 2 minutes, and then after halfway there's no guaranteed time in the work area.
Right.
And I think from what I saw on Facebook, fans were complaining to the Outlaws that they feel like Gravel should have had a spot, you know, re-gifted to him because of the gate opening causing, you know, that the right rear wheel being bent. I'll find the picture of it, but it took the outer half and just accordioned it from being, I think it's a 10-inch half, to about 5 inches. So it smashed the wheel almost flat, and, I mean, that's, you know, cost him $100,000.
Do we have a replay of that? Is there any way that we can pull up a replay of that incident there and kind of go through the sequence of events and how it transpired a little bit? Can we do that?
Yeah, I just pulled up the picture of his wheel real quick.
Right.
Let me get this.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you can just see it. Weld, they build the greatest, the lightest, and the toughest wheels in sprint car racing. For them to accordion like that, I mean, that's a hit that we don't ever see that often.
Right. Well, that's pretty disturbing. So, to be honest with you, I haven't went back and watched the entire race yet. So I'd like to see the sequence of events, when it happened and what happened. Take me through this a little bit here, Austin.
Yeah, so if you notice, the gate's open, and he hits it right there. You saw the sparks?
Yeah, yeah.
So Carson McCarl...
How did the gate open up,
Carl, he... I don't know how he opened it, but he hit it. If you notice, coming off of 4, right in front of Macedo is Carson McCarl, and he hits the gate right about there. You can see at under the running order, you can see Carson's right rear in the wall.
Right.
And you can kind of see you can see right here.
The gate open up.
The
a
gate's
little bit.
Open, and if you look down at Carson's right rear tire's off the bead and
gone.
Outer 4 inches of the wheel half is bare and showing.
Yeah.
So now the gate's open, and here's Gravel, who you're not looking for a gate to be there.
Right.
Or be open in front of you, has nowhere to go and barely clips it with the right rear. Well, I mean, he smoked it, barely clipped it.
And you can see
the shower sparks. And
at that time, Gravel's running second, right?
Yeah, he was running second. And now we get a yellow for Carson's stopping on the track, and now they see the gates opening, and which I think ultimately resulted in a red flag for them to try and fix the gates. I know from watching back on the replay, they had a heck of a time
trying to get a pedestrian gate.
Yeah, for the fans to cross over. I know they were having a heck of a time with you know, the UTVs and push trucks and probably four or five guys trying to get the gate to go back into its spot. And I mean, that's just kind of one of those freak things you don't plan on. You hope you don't ever see happen.
Steve said that was the second time the gate opened during a race that night. Have you heard of that before?
No, because this was on Saturday night. I was racing Saturday night, and I was able to watch the feature only. I did not know that the gate opened, you know, one time before that during the night.
Wow. Well, and as you know, I was out there watching you on Saturday night at I-70 Speedway, so I didn't get to watch a lot of that race. I did catch Skagit as I was driving home. What do you think about what Dylan says? Poor Todd going to pay himself $100K for winning that. That was a costly gate. I said, poor Todd was going to get to pay himself $100K for winning. That was a costly gate. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Do you feel that if they would have allowed him to fix that tire or that wheel and the damage on his car, do you feel that people would have felt like they were playing favoritism to Todd Quarian's car?
If they didn't do the same thing for Carson McCarl, yes. And it's not in the rule book either to allow somebody to change a tire and go back up there and regain their spot. It's not built in the rule book. And
right.
It's no different from someone smoking a tractor tire that got moved. Let's say you're following a car and someone in front of you smokes a tractor tire and it moves out in front of you and you smoke your front end. And you go out there, go to the hot pit and change it. What do you have to do? You go to the back. You don't get your spot back. So it's one of those deals where it just sucks. You can't do nothing to fix it. And you know, the past, you know, I think 2 years now, Gravel has had like awful. I think he won maybe one or two races up there with the Outlaws at Houston's, but every other race he's had awful luck. And it's just, you know, to have your car owner own that track and have a lot of, you know, hype going in and kind of maybe some pressure to run good. It's just a bad luck spit you more than not.
Let me ask the listeners out there that are listening to the show right now. I want to ask you the same question I just asked Austin. Do you feel if they would have allowed him and give him the time to fix the car that they would have been playing favoritism towards Todd Quarian? Yes or no question. It's yes or no. I don't know. Part of me thinks that if you do that, you're going to have some people that are going to complain about that because they're going to think they're playing a little favoritism to David Gravel. You got to feel like that a little bit, right?
100%. I mean, it's like I said, it's not in the rule book to allow anybody any special, you know, time or rules or whatever. Yeah, you go to the work area, you don't make it back out, you don't get your spot back, you know, or you don't return if you have a lap completed. And if it's just not, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Wes Goodwin says yes. Sam says yes. Anybody else out there have a response to that question? I'd like to know what people would feel. I bet they figured it out that David Hall... Frog Hall says, I bet they figured it out. Laugh out loud. 100 big ones. It cost him. They put them back in his position. Yes. So the people would have thought they were playing favoritism, I think. I think the majority of people would think yes. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would think the same thing. And I'm a big gravel fan too. I mean, I wanted to see gravel win it.
No doubt.
Just because of him in the Houston's car and him in Todd's car. But, you know, it's just what was dealt to him.
Right. So what did you think of the finish of that race? Unbelievable, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised what Sheldon did. It just seems to be kind of normal for Sheldon.
He's the man right now, isn't he?
It's just, you watch, I don't know what's going on in Houston. It's, I don't know if it's just the style of dirt they have or the way they prep it, but they usually, it's really narrow and fast for the first couple laps after a rework, and then, right. You know, you get to maybe lap 20 or so of the race, and it's already starting to get black and maybe laying in patchy rubber. We saw it happen on Thursday night, and it happened, you know, Saturday night too.
Right.
We saw, you know, J-Mac and Buddy kind of smoking the right rear, and you could see cars, you know, on the bottom, you know, just get incredible drive coming off right in the middle of the wax. So you knew something was down there, and really the only thing that helped Sheldon win that was, you know, J-Mac and Buddy were in traffic. You know, they went in there not trying to miss the rubber and being defensive on keeping their spots and not making any mistakes on the last lap, and it just backed their pace up enough to where Sheldon could use the cushion and just get a good enough run to, you know, match them. And then once you match them, now they're scrambling to you know, save their race. And they knew they messed up. They knew they have pressure on them. And once you showed them the nose, I mean, that's, they lost their momentum in their race, and it worked out good for them.
What do you think that Buddy Kofoit and James McFadden were thinking when he went blowing around them both in the same corner?
They would have been speechless. I mean, I would have been too.
Be.
I mean,
had to be speechless.
You're running right in the best part of the track, you think, and you can see the lap cars in front of you, matching your pace and driving away from you in the rubber. You're staying right with them, you know,
right.
And you just don't see anybody running the top, and you know there's nothing up there, and you see Sheldon just go blowing by you up there. It's like, what in the world am I doing?
That
have down
to
here?
Be
it's
disheartening,
just,
wouldn't it?
It would be. It would crush your, you know, kind of crush yourself. But, you know, like I said, he just got really lucky the way the lap cars and the way, you know, J-Mac and Buddy were kind of running.
And they gave him enough room on top of it, too.
Yeah. Well, nobody expected anybody to go blowing by him on the outside.
Right.
You know, I bet you McFadden probably thought he was going to get a bumper from Buddy at some point.
Yeah.
But, you know, he just saw, you know, Sheldon drive by him.
Yeah. What out of the two races this last weekend, let's go back and talk a little bit about Tyler Courtney's win at Skagit. He picked up $76,000. What out of the two wins, you got to think that Houston's was the most exciting of the two races, right?
I would agree.
Mm-hmm. Tyler Courtney beat Kerry Madsen and Dominic Selzy. But I think the dramatic, the theatrics of watching a guy pass on the last lap, pass two cars and win the race on the last lap to pick up all that money, I got to feel that that's the better of the two races myself.
Well, that too, but you look at it, Courtney swept, I believe, all three nights, if not two nights of Dirt
Cup. That's true.
So, you know, you have Sheldon's crazy
$76,000.
You have Sheldon's crazy last lap, and then he kind of struggled all week, and then you have Courtney's dominance at Dirt Cup. It's just, you know, it's hard to say which one was better, but you can just look at both of them and know kind of, I don't say which one's more important, I guess. Right. We just know which one's bigger.
Yeah.
And there's no knock on Dirt Cup. Dirt Cup's, you know, it's big in its region, but, you know, when you're paying $100,000 for the Outlaws, the competition's so stiff up there, you're going to have the best of the best. And, you know, I feel like he maybe had 10 or so cars that could have won at Dirt Cup, and, you know, at the Outlaw race, you had 25, 30, 40 cars that could have won.
Right, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about last night at Lincoln, Pennsylvania Speedway. It was the third race of Speed Week. They started off with a couple reds in that race, and let's face it, Brent Marks started 13th, but he did benefit from a couple of those cautions there, a couple of those reds at the start of the race. That moved him up just a little bit, right?
Yeah, he got lucky. You know, Billy Dietrich, Danny Dietrich.
I don't know if it's luck. I think he... I don't want to say that he was lucky in winning the race.
No, I got lucky.
Because he was
lucky.
The fastest car on the racetrack.
He was, but he just... The luck was on his side that night with the start.
Yeah.
You know, you knock out Billy and Danny Dietrich, two of the best in Pennsylvania. You knock out, I think, Dylan Norris in the 44 car. You knock out Chad Trout. And then maybe a couple other cars that might have been affected by it. But yeah, there's, you know, three or four cars in front of you that you wiped out. And then, you know, you have, I believe Brent's, you know, one of the best cars in Pennsylvania right now and kind of in the country. He's in the top 10 of the most earnings earned in sprint car racing in 2022.
Right.
And he's always been good there. You know, he left the Outlaw Tour, went back to Pennsylvania, and ran there for a couple years and got really good. Then kind of came back out and started doing like an Outlaw style schedule again. Mm-hmm. And it showed. I mean, to kind of run down Larson, who we probably all picked to win, to run down Larson and drive by him was pretty dominating.
Right. I got to step back here. Chris said, what about when you get damaged from a push vehicle? Not your fault, but you can fix and get your car placed back. What do you think about that? When a push vehicle causes you damage when they're trying to push you off?
Well, usually if you get ran over by a push truck, you're done for that race or that night.
Usually there's a lot of damage.
You know, I saw a deal at 81 with MWRA. A friend of ours got hit by a push truck, and it kind of tore him up, and he had to call the night because of the damage he had sustained from it. But
was that at Lake Ozark Speedway?
No, that was 81 Saturday night with MWRA. But we've seen plenty of push truck incidents, and
yeah,
I mean, there should be rules in the rule book now because of situations like this, you know, with either push trucks, you know, causing damage or, you know, track
or
gates.
Extreme conditions.
Yeah.
Right?
Or track gates or just, yeah, you know, objects you can't control. You know, there needs to be a rule in there saying if this happens, this is what's done. You know, maybe, okay, if it's in the rule book that you get your spot back, that needs to be in there now.
Right.
Just not like think somebody said on the chat, not making up as you go.
Rich says, yes. Because there are no provisional in current rules, though there probably should be for situations like this. I don't want to see World of Outlaws making rules on the fly like NASCAR has been known to do. What do you think about that?
I agree with you. Like
yeah,
I said,
I'm
it's
with
just,
him. Yeah.
You know, we've seen incidents now, you know, this past week that, you know, we don't ever see, and you know, you're exactly right on needing rules in the rule book and not making up on the fly.
Yeah. So last night, Brent Marks picks up the win. Did you think once Kyle Larson got out in the lead last night, did you think it was over? I think most people think it's over when Kyle Larson gets in the lead, don't they?
I mean, you have to because of what Kyle's been known for and known what to do in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, usually when Kyle's out front, Kyle's just going to walk away with it and pick up another win. And you know, it's kind of shown this year. He hasn't won as many races as he has in the past. His speed's kind of is off of par, and it's just kind of opened him up to situations like this. You know, I think,
right,
you know, he went from racing 60 to 70 plus races in 2020 with the sprint car, and to probably 30 or so last year and this year. So, you know, they're not, you know, as you know, in tune and up to the current happenings of sprint car racing. I feel like, I mean,
right,
they'll figure it out at some point, but it's just they kind of, you know, dialed themselves out of the race. I feel like,
I think Frog asked, how'd Christopher do it? He ran eighth last night, I believe it was. I was a little set back by about the performance of Anthony Macri last night as well, weren't you? I mean, didn't you feel that starting up there towards the front, that he was gonna be a player in this race? Didn't you think so?
I mean, you would think so, but we played an interview with him yesterday that, you know, he says he kind of struggles at Lincoln. He has an issue with getting around cars, and he's just, yes, he might, like, he won last or Saturday or Sunday night.
Yeah.
You know, he might have won there, but he hasn't had the best track record there, and it's just. I think last night we might look at it as a bad night for Macri because we expect him to win like a Larson, but you know, it might be a win in their book since they struggle at Lincoln. But
right.
I mean, anytime you can run against, you know, Macri, Peck, Larson, and Marks, it's gonna
Danny
be
Dietrich, you know.
Yeah, that's no matter how you finish amongst those guys, it's going to be a good night for you, I feel like.
Yeah. The start of that race, though, was kind of a cluster, wasn't it? I mean, two starts, two reds.
Yeah, I can just hear Matt Ward on the radio. He did this to us one night at a national tour race. He called us a bunch of junior sprints because we couldn't get a race started. And I could just imagine what the race control would
Matt
be saying.
Matt Ward said that?
Yeah, he called us a bunch of junior sprints. And, I mean, he had every right to it. I could only imagine what they were said to the drivers last night. But, yeah, they had a heck of a time trying to get that race started.
I think Chase Dietz, Matt Campbell, Skylar G., Chad Chaff Trout, and Billy Dietrich were the guys.
The first red, yeah. You know, were those guys you just named off were involved in an accident in turn two. Danny was either didn't see the guy sitting in front of him, stopped in turn three, or he just couldn't get stopped in time and ran over a stopped car on the track and flipped. So you had a flip in two and you had a flip in three and totally separate accidents under yellow. So, right. I mean, like you said, you wiped out, you know, three or four cars right there in the first two laps that were, you know, right in front of Brent Marks.
Yeah. That was the 11th win for Brent Marks at Lincoln, by the way, just so people would know. All right. Well, listen, folks, we're going to take a break real quick. And when we come back, Michael McDowell is going to join us here on the show. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on in his season so far. He's a good guy, and we can't wait to have him on Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Here at Specialty Sportswear, in-house, we do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business, to make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
3 9 hole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill. And joining us now on the show is Cup driver Michael McDowell. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Well, we're doing all right, bud. You know, you've had an outstanding year so far this year. Wouldn't you say that your year has been very successful so far this year?
I would, yeah, and I appreciate that. I think it's been a great season for us. I mean, obviously, last year winning the Daytona 500, it's hard to top that. But overall, just our speed and our performance and our finishes have been, you know, better this year than in any of our previous years. And, you know, I feel like we've really, you know, sort of turned a corner where we're a top 10 car, you know, a lot of these weekends. And it's been fun. It's been a fun season, and we're growing and we're building and we're going in the right direction, and we'll see what happens.
Hey, do you think that the reason that the success that you're having, and we see a lot of the smaller teams starting to advance up towards the top a little bit, do you think it's because of the new car?
I think that's an element for sure. I mean, I definitely don't want to deny that part of it, because I feel like having a level playing field and all the cars and chassis and parts and pieces being the same has really closed, you know, the gap from the big teams to the small teams.
Yeah.
And we sort of anticipated that. On the flip side, we've always had great people at Front Row. And I've known that for years, that we have a really talented group. But it's hard to make up that deficit to the big teams with, you know, the older car, just because they were so far ahead and they were developing at a faster rate than you are. And so how can you catch up when they're developing faster than you are and they have a head start? And so now everybody has kind of a fresh start. And the best teams and the biggest teams are still going to do that. They're still going to outdevelop a little bit. But the playing field seems to be really close right now. And like I said, every weekend, you know, we have speed and we have potential to run in the top 10, which in years past that has not been the case. So I do feel like this car has really leveled the playing field. And at the same time, it's allowed, you know, our team and our people to be able to show their ability and their talent. And so it's been fun.
What do you think is the big difference between the car that we ran last year and the car this year? That, you know, everybody talks about the difference in these cars. What is the biggest difference for you as a driver between last year's car and this year's car?
There are a lot of differences. I mean, race cars are race cars, but the overall for me is, you know, this car in particular, you have to drive with a little bit different style. And to, you know, break it down, I mean, I think that the biggest things that stand out is we're doing a lot more braking and downshifting everywhere, every track that we go to than we ever have. And so that adds an element of challenge and difficulty, and I think is a variable that, you know, helps you to stand out or not stand out. And then just these cars in general, we see a lot more guys spinning out and crashing, you know, not just racing, but by themselves. And I think that they're less forgiving. They're a little bit harder to drive. And, you know, that's, I feel like for me has been helpful, because pushing right up to the edge and getting all the speed out of the car you can without overstepping that bounds is a tough balance.
Right.
And it's, you know, for me, it's been been a challenge to, you know, get yourself to that level, but I feel like I have a good feel now and kind of know what I need and know where that limit's at without overstepping it. So,
yeah. Well, let me ask you about last weekend at Nashville. You know, it looked like that had to be very difficult to downshift getting into the corner, steering the car through the corner. Talk about that a little bit as far as the shifting part of it, because, you know, in years past, we didn't see a lot of shifting, right? But we're seeing a lot of it this year. And tell me about the dynamic of trying to do that when you're racing the car.
Well, you know, the reason that we're shifting this year is because we have a sequential shifter and we have one more gear, right? So last year we had 4-speed. You know, historically in NASCAR, you've had a 4-speed. Now we have a 5-speed. And with that 5-speed, it brings all the gears closer together. And with that, you know, when you go into the corner and you're on the brake and, you know, you're slowing the car down 20 miles an hour, now you can go ahead and downshift and go down a gear so you have that little bit of extra RPM and power out of the corner to accelerate.
Right.
And like you said, it is a challenge because you're driving in as hard as you can and the car, you know, wants to be loose on entry and you got to take your hand off the wheel and make that downshift. And it's hard to tell yourself to do that when you're already fighting it and chasing it.
Yeah.
But for me, I think that that's also been one of those areas that has fit well into my style, being, you know, my past being road racing, where you do a lot of shifting, a lot of upshifting, a lot of downshifting. You know, I think that this has kind of helped me in that area of, you know, just comfort of being able to do that. And the timing of that and what it takes. You know, we saw two cars spin out in qualifying, and those spin outs were from a bad downshift. And it's very easy to do. And so I think this car just requires you to be more precise and you know, less area or less room for mistakes.
Yeah. Sorry to get kind of geeky on you about everything because, you know, I used to own an ARCA team back in the day and, had a little success. Clint Boyer runs second for me driving at Nashville Super Speedway back in 2003. I don't know if you remember back in those days, but it seems like this year for you that it's been maybe your best year. You've had top tens at Bristol, Talladega, Darlington, and Charlotte. You ran seventh at Daytona. I know that's not what you wanted to do, but this year, what has been the difference between maybe years past and this year?
Yeah, I think that it's a build off of last year where we were running, you know, 15th to 20th pretty consistently. We've just made that next step, which is so tough, you know, and we've talked about it for years at our shop, you know, going from 30th to 25th, it's a big jump, but we were able to do that. Going from 25th to 20th was another big jump, and that was hard. But when you're running in the teens, going from the teens to single digits is incredibly challenging. Because if you just think about it, you got Joe Gibbs Racing that's got four cars. You got Hendricks that's got four cars. Mm-hmm. And then you got Stuart Haas that has four cars. Well, that's 12. Right there. Mm-hmm. And you're not even counting Penske or RCR or any of these other things, right? And so to run up in the top 10, you are beating a lot of teams and a lot of cars that you shouldn't be. And and so, you know, it's a big jump to make that next step. And I think that the next gen car has helped us. And then just momentum and building, you know, it's been a steady climb for us as far as getting better and better every year. And I think the next gen sped that up for us this year is we were, you know, able to make a decent jump.
Yeah, we're visiting with Michael McDowell, Cup driver. I got to ask you, you finished third at Sonoma. You got to probably be looking pretty forward to Road America this weekend.
Yeah, for sure. Road America is, you know, one of my best tracks. And with Sonoma going as smooth as it did, you know, qualifying well, running well in the race, you know, definitely not a fluke for us. We were a top five, top three car all day. So going to Road America, we feel confident. We feel good. You know, anything can happen in the race, but I think we'll have the speed. And hopefully we put ourselves in position to win. I mean, that's what it's all about in the Cup Series. You gotta win to get in these playoffs, or at least we feel like we have to.
Yeah.
And if we can do that, it's going to be a huge accomplishment. And so we got our eyes focused on the prize, and we're all working hard towards it. And we got good momentum going with us, you know, and we feel really confident where we're at as a team and an organization, and and it's just about getting it done on the racetrack.
Well, you know, we're in the Show Me State, and I know you raced at Gateway, and you led, what, 34 laps or something like that down there. What did you think about that race at Gateway?
I love Gateway. You know, you were talking about your experience as an owner in ARCA. You know, I ran in the ARCA series as well, and I was fortunate that Gateway was on the schedule and got the opportunity to run there. And that was actually a place in the ARCA car and in Xfinity where you would shift. And so those were good track. That was a good track for me because of that. Yeah. And then coming back with, you know, the Cup car and going there for the first time with the Cup car and the next gen Cup car, it really drove a lot for me, you know, the brake zones and downshifting a lot like a road course. And so I think it fit well for my style. Great crowd, great turnout. They've done an amazing job with that facility there. And I'm excited that they had such a success. That'll be on the schedule for a long time, and we'll keep coming back.
Before we let you go, I got to ask you, we're in Kansas City, Racing Boys is, and I got to ask you about Kansas Speedway. What are your thoughts about that racetrack?
One of my favorite mile and a half. I mean, it's got a lot of character now. You know, it's got some season to it with, you know, winners, and, you know, the track is got a lot of grooves, and you can run the top, the middle, the bottom. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been there already this year with this next gen car. I thought it put on a great race. Our cars were really good in traffic there. So that was, you know, exciting to see that. And, you know, for me, Kansas is always a fun place to go and enjoy not just the racetrack, but everything that's around there with, you know, the mall and all the food and barbecue, and there's a lot of great things happening in Kansas, so it's a fun place to go to.
Yeah, and finally, I know every person that you do an interview with probably talks about that crash that you had in 2008 down there in Texas. That was one of the most brutal crashes that I've ever seen. It was a miracle that you walked away from that wreck. If you can just give me a quick story about that wreck and how brutal it was, and how did you recover from that wreck?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's not what you want to get known for.
Right.
And you know, it's not the highlight reel you want to have. But,
right.
You know, for me, I was able to race the next day, you know, and run 500 miles at Texas. And I think that was a testament to just, you know, the improvements that NASCAR made with that next, you know, that at that point, that was the,
right.
You know, the next gen car, the COT, right?
Right.
And so, unfortunately, I was the test dummy for it. But, you know, beyond that, it was, you know, it's, to me, it's just a part of, you know, it's one part of the story of your career of, you know, the ups and downs and the highs and lows. And it's not, like I said, it's not what you want to be known for. And I feel like Daytona 500 is redemption for that, you know, of like, that's what I'm known for now.
Well, unfortunately, I had to bring that up, but we really appreciate
it. No, it's all good.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time to join us here on Mostly Motorsports today. Good luck to you this weekend. I got a feeling you're going to have a good run at Road America after that good finish that you had at Sonoma here just a couple weeks ago. So good luck to you this weekend, and we'll be pulling for you. All right, Michael?
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, there you have it, Michael McDowell. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more Mostly Motorsports in a moment. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly,
By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Here at Specialty Sportswear, in-house, we do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business to make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
3 9 hole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Hey, welcome back to Mostly Motorsports. We want to remind everybody about the track tribute to Ascot Park that's going on up at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. As we speak, it'll be going on through October 1st. Man, Ascot Park, one of the great racetracks of all time in the United States. You need to get up there and check it out right now. They're going to have all kinds of videos, driver uniforms, helmets, memorabilia about Ascot Park. They've got several race cars that raced at Ascot Park up there right now as we speak. So get up to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum and make sure you check out their tribute to Ascot Park. It's one of the great exhibits of all time up there at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum as we speak. And again, that will be going on through October 1st. Also want to remind everybody about the Sprint Car Raffle. They've got a 2022 Triple X chassis with a Moyer 410. Did I say that right? I didn't say that right.
Moyer
racing engine, a 410 racing engine in it. They're going to be giving that away Friday, December 16th. If you can't make it up to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, you can always make your purchase online for your raffle tickets. You can do that at SprintCarRaffle.com. That's SprintCarRaffle.com to have a chance to win a race-ready 410 Sprint Car. Again, that's up at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. Or you can call them at 641-842-6176. Again, that number is 641-842-6176. And they want to thank all the builders and manufacturers for taking part in the donation of all the stuff that goes on to the sprint car, this 2022 Triple X chassis. And also, don't forget about the IMSA GTLM Championship Edition C8R Corvette that they will be drawing on Saturday, August 18th during the Knoxville Nationals. This is one of 1,000 Corvettes, folks. This is not your standard Corvette. This is an IMSA Racing Corvette, and they only made 1,000 of them. And these cars go for a lot of money, folks. I'm telling you, I saw one in the paper for $150,000. Barrett Jackson just sold one as for $300,000 on one of their auctions that they just had. If you'd like to register to win the Corvette, you can go to CorvetteC8RContest.com. That's Corvette, the letter C, the number 8, the letter R, Contest.com. CorvetteC8RContest.com. If you'd like to register to win this Corvette, it's very rare, folks, and it's a great opportunity to get one of the all-time great Corvettes that have ever been made. It's a 2022 IMSA GTLM Corvette Championship Edition. So check it out. And when you go up there, make sure you tell Bob Baker that the Racing Boys told you about the Corvette, the sprint car, and the Ascot Park Track Tribute. So anyway, Austin, what should we talk about? You know, we didn't talk much about Brandon Shepherd winning that late model race at Jackson, Illinois. He became the all-time winningest driver with the World of Outlaws, driving the family car. That was pretty cool, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can make history in your own family-owned car, that's pretty cool, right? And I was kind of reading up on the stats and like the winningest drivers with the Outlaws, and
right.
The guy he beat, well, he was tied with Josh Richards for a while, and he finally, you know, won at Jacksonville, which, you know, moved him into the all-time winningest driver with 79 career wins with the Outlaws. But the cool thing about him beating Josh Richards is, so Josh Richards won pretty much all of those races in the Rocket House car. Then, you know, a couple years ago, Josh left that ride and went to Clint Bowyer and then went to the best performance one car, and then it's kind of jumped around here
right.
You know, since then. And when he made that move out of the Rocket car, they swapped rides with Brandon Shepherd, and that brought Brandon Shepherd into the Rocket House car. And then, you know, he took over what Josh was doing with the Outlaws. And in that short amount of time, he's won, you know, 70-some-odd races, you know, and I think it was
79.
Yeah, 79 races, and mm-hmm. I think 4 or 5 years with running with the Outlaws, and to do that in the Rocket House car and have the first and second driver in all-time wins, to say that they were able to pick up majority of those wins in the Rocket car is pretty cool to say. I mean,
yeah.
to have one team dominate a series like that is just insane.
It was kind of odd to see him driving the B5 car, the family-owned car, right?
Yeah, With Richards kind of pulling off the Outlaw Tour and committing to the full time with the Lucas Oil Late Model Dirt Series, I mean, it wouldn't make sense to kind of see them, you know, go back and run with the Outlaws for one night at Jacksonville, and you know, just that's what's nice about having your family owned stuff too. You
right.
can kind of go races that, you know, your full time job can't go attend. So yeah, it was definitely cool to see him pick up a win in the B5 car.
You know who's kind of impressed me lately is Gordy Gundaker. That kid can drive now. He's always seems like he's up there towards the front. He's always in the top 10. He's always battling for position. You know, Kevin Gundaker's son, Tammy Gundaker's son as well. He's always shown quite a bit of a talent behind the wheel.
Yeah, from what I've seen of Gordy here in the recent years, I mean, I didn't follow them too much, and I've just kind of seen bits and pieces of his career, and he's kind of struggled and hadn't had that much speed here a couple of years ago, and I think, you know, at some point everything starts to click for you, and you maybe
light bulb comes on.
Yeah, light bulb comes on, maybe the equipment got better, or got a crew chief, whatever it was, but I would say in the past 2 or 3 years, you've seen Gordy's kind of career take a different path, and saw him, you know, performing better on bigger stages. We saw him do really good at the Dome and other races kind of around here in the Midwest, and to see him kind of commit to doing the full-time Outlaw schedule is going to be good for him. It's going to be a learning experience. We'll see how he does with it. But I mean, at some point you got to branch out and go in with the big boys and take that experience as you can.
Were you surprised to see Wayne Johnson win at I-70 Speedway? No.
Nah, I was more surprised that Brown's equipment didn't
blow
didn't
up
fail
earlier.
Before, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was a little, to be honest with you, how many laps did Brian Brown's motor sound flat?
Let me tell you something.
It went on and on for laps after laps after laps. I could not believe it hadn't blown up. It was a miracle that motor didn't blow the bottom out of it.
Yeah, I don't, like I said yesterday, I mean, Charlie Garrett's been around it for a long time. I mean, the dude's 80 years old, still building sprint car engines, and,
right,
you know, he builds a good piece, and it's shown between, you know, Brown and the other customers that Charlie has that, you know, they're good at all types of different levels, and, you know, that's one of the levels that they're good at, probably not the one you want to be talking about, but,
right,
you know, to see it run that sick for that long and still be somewhat alive at the end of the race is absolutely incredible.
So the 2C1, Brian Brown come home second. Jason Martin has been a pleasant surprise with the Lucas Oil ASCS National Tour. He finished third, and I got to give a shout out to Brandon Anderson, who picked up a fourth place finish, and Garrett Williamson, who got fifth place at I-70 Speedway. Are you surprised by that at all?
No, you sounded more surprised about Jason Martin and I'm far from being surprised on his performance. I mean, the guy's been around sprint car racing his entire life, and he's had a lot of success in different types of sprint car racing, kind of around, you know, the Nebraska area, and I believe he ran with the Outlaws for a couple of years. So he's been around it, seen it all, done it all. And then to see him finally take that step and it's weird saying he's a rookie, but become out there on the national tour and gave it a shot this year is going to be interesting. You know, people were really not counting him in the championship battle at the beginning of the year. They didn't know how he would do, and you know, it's shown that he's going to be a contender for it. I think if you know, he kind of had some bad luck down there in Louisiana, and he rebounded pretty good at I-70. But if he can keep his consistency up and be right there with Wayne and Blake, I wouldn't be surprised to see the 36 in the top three, if not top five, in the standings at the end of the year.
Could the biggest surprise of the night be where Blake Hahn started fourth and ran 12th? Could that be the biggest surprise of the night, you think?
Well, I mean, it's the surprise is that Blake broke, and Blake didn't finish the race, but Blake still finished.
His motor laid down on him.
Yeah. But he still finished 12th. It just showed how many guys had issues with getting hot, blowing up, or just pulling off due to, you know, them not having a good night, getting lapped, and being on a half-mile tire on equipment. And just going to, you know, call tonight and save their stuff for another race. And that's like, I think Ryan Bickett was a hard charger, and he came from, I believe, the B main and just rode around. I mean, I lapped him one or two times, and I was a seventh place car, and he just rode around and stayed out of trouble and was able to, you know, capitalize on people's misfortune,
right?
And was able to be the hard charger. So, you know,
sometimes you got to realize that you just don't have the car to win, right?
Yeah,
or to compete for that.
Bad, and you just take what'll give you, and it gave him a lot. And it's just, you know, you see a lot of teams that, you know, you're like, well, I can't believe they ran that good, but you know, a lot of teams also had issues that night too.
Right. You know, a little surprise was Miles Paulus. He started 15th, ran 21st. Did you hear? Did he have problems with his car?
Nope. He just pulled off. You know, he got lapped by Brown and Wayne. You know, when they first made their first path through lap traffic, and you know the deal about half mile racing, and it's once you get stuck, you know, back past probably 14th or so, and you lose the main pack, you're kind of strung up by yourself. You're not going to go anywhere unless you have a yellow. And we did have a yellow for a long time. And, you know, he got lapped and, you know, knew he wasn't going to go anywhere. And probably just, I know I was talking to him before the races got going. The motor he's on now is about time for a rebuild. And he has his second one ready. And he's just kind of, you know, riding out the races till he has to put his other one in. And just,
you
know, if
you want to wait till the last second before you put your new motor in, right?
Just, you know, He knew that he wasn't going to do anything, you know, back there. You know, he wasn't going to make a lot of money, you know, trying to run it out. And
why put the laps on it?
Exactly. And he's just, it's not a decision you want to make as a driver, but sometimes it's better to be conservative on your equipment.
You know, I didn't realize it, but Garrett Williamson, he won the B, started 17th in the A, and worked his way up to 5th. That kid has shown a lot of improvement over the last couple of years.
Yeah, he took off and I committed to running above the cushion at the start of the race, and it worked out for a couple laps. And then, you know, a lot of the drivers just kind of bailed on the bottom and moved up to the cushion as the race, you know, probably got 3 or 4 laps in, and the track kind of got dirty again, and he committed to the bottom where nobody else was, and he was able to drive by a bunch of cars and get into the top 10 and into clean air, and was able to capitalize on the yellows and be there for the opportunity of you know, getting a top 5 finish. I know in the last restart that we had, I lined up behind him.
Right.
And I was in 7th, he was in 6th, and Covington was in 5th, and he was able to get by Covington and get the 5th on the last lap. And, you know, it's just, if you're starting that deep, you got to go, and you can't wait around. And, you know, Garrett's, you know, wide open all the time, and he's going to give it 100% every lap. And, right. You know, it worked out for him, and he was able to rebound his night.
You know, you figure it out after a while. You stand up on the wheel, get your elbows up, you're down on the pedal, but it seems like it's starting to come around. He's starting to figure it out a little bit more as time goes on with the Lucas Oil ASCS National Sprint Car Tour. Did you hear about Donnie Schott's father passed away yesterday? Did you hear about that, Danny?
I seen that, and we all knew Danny's battle with cancer was looming, and we all knew this day would come at some point, and it's unfortunate that it happened. Yeah. And I didn't realize that. I saw, you know, a picture of Danny here probably a couple weeks ago watching his grandkids race sprint cars, and I think it was Fargo or somewhere up there, and he looked pretty good. And it's crazy how some things, you know, happen so fast, but it's unfortunate we lost him.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, let me just say, my girlfriend Deidre, she lost her grandmother on Sunday, so our thoughts are out to her as well. Frog said it was a good show. I was impressed by Austin's run. That's what Frog said. Did he come over and talk to you after the races?
He did.
Yeah. So anyway, long story short is that how do you think this $250,000 to win at Houston's in 2023 is going to affect Skagit? Do you think that Skagit's going to have the nerve to book up against him? Do you think they're going to do that?
I think they're going to be ridiculous too if they do it. I mean, you only had a couple out of town cars come and show up. Zeb Wise, Corey Elias, and Sunshine. There might have been one or two more. I think Kerry Mattson, you can call him an outsider car.
Pretty much all of them were from the West Coast.
Yeah, and you know, if you're going to kill your race trying to book up against a race that pays that much, and you know, $100,000 is a lot. $250,000, that's even more.
$250,000.
Those four drivers that came to your race will not be there next year if you book it up the same weekend. So, you know, it's. If you're wanting to try and grow the 410, you know, racing on the West Coast, and definitely at Skagit, since it's been 360 country the last couple of years, you gotta give it an open weekend and give yourself a fair shot at getting a lot of cars there.
Right. Caleb says, I hope Skagit gets a World of Outlaws sanction and runs on another weekend. I'm with you. And Paul says, my condolences to the families. And I'm sure he's talking about Danny Schott's. Caleb says, I hope more Crown Jewel events on World of Outlaws schedule will build the tour. Does the World of Outlaws need more premium races, do you think? I don't know if they do they?
It wouldn't hurt them.
You know,
how would it hurt them? I don't think it would. I think it just, do we need more? Sure, we could need some more. Is it a big deal? No, not really, I guess.
Should Dirt Cup be a World of Outlaws sanctioned event?
Sure.
I think so.
Might as well. If you want to have a lot of 410s, bring in the biggest 410 series in the country.
I don't know if the powers that be will work together or work against each other. We'll just, time will tell, right? We'll just have to wait and see. I don't know. 410 racing in general needs more. There's a ton on the late model side, both World of Outlaw and Lucas. You know what? We've talked about that a lot. There is a lot more money going on in the late model world than there is in the sprint car world, and we've talked about it more than one time on this show, that we need to find $1 million to win race. You think it ever happened?
I mean, we're seeing 250 at Houston's.
Yeah. Caleb said there isn't as many crown jewel events for the All-Star Circuit of Champions. That's true. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah.
There may be a handful. You probably can count them all in your hand.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, folks, thanks for tuning in to the show today. We appreciate it. Tomorrow, Steve Post is going to be on with us. We'll talk about what happened at Skagit. We'll talk about what happened up at Husetts. I know he put up a nice little post at the end of the night up at Husetts. We might play that tomorrow as well. Steve Post will join us again tomorrow about 12:20. I want to thank Austin O'Neill for all of his help with the show today, as well as my partner Kirk Elliott. We'll do it all over again tomorrow, 12 noon Central Time. Steve Post to join us. We hope that you will too. For Austin O'Neill, for Kirk Elliott, I'm Scott Traylor saying thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.